Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let's get back to the six-pack, shall we? We got distracted there by Crowley and other matters. This Cowboys-Steelers Super Bowl. It's up on the television here. I can't get enough of that stuff. I'll watch that all day long. I'll watch old Super Bowls, yes. Everything.
Can I read this?
Please.
A text for you.
Yeah.
After golf, there should not be a fancy meal in the dining room of the club. It should be the bar outside on the patio. That's what the 19th hole is. A shower will take momentum of the day if you have to wait.
Very well said.
After the 18th, I say go in as you are. There you go. Someone,
yes,
a friend who is on your side.
I had somebody else who said who works for a local golf organization who said, "Wait, someone made you take a shower after golf before dinner?" I said, "No, but Zangrilli is implying I should. He's implying that I should." And I'm getting the distinct feeling that people are against this, which I'm happy about.
You'll be fine. You'll be completely fine.
Meaning what?
Meaning you don't need to take a shower then. Just go to dinner with Zangrilli and everything will be okay and the sun will rise the next day.
This guy who texted Zeiss raises a good point. I mean, I'm not going into the dining room to anything like that. You go out to the bar.
You go out to the patio.
You sit on the deck.
Eat a couple burgers,
yes,
and french fries, and you're,
yeah,
okay.
Nobody needs a shower for that. But again, I'm wondering now if Zangrilli may have some sort of cleanliness fetish where he won't eat next to someone that he deems to be not clean enough. Anybody know anything about Zangrilli to that point? Paul, do you?
I didn't realize that he was an aristocrat.
Help me, Dan, please. I can't take it anymore.
I didn't know that either. I'm looking forward to it, though. Anyway, Paul, I don't know about you, but look at this. Look at Rocky and Franco in the same backfield.
Yeah, really.
And then Franco just took a carry and ran right behind Mike Webster and Sam Davis. And Cliff Harris came in and just lit him up. Just lit him up. I just saw Harvey Martin run out and kill Stallworth on a wide receiver screen. How about these shows, the NFL Football Life? I was watching Barry's. I get sucked into them every single time. I never get sick of them.
The Football Life?
Yeah. Walter Payton the other day was watching that one.
You know,
where a big part of it was Payton, Dicka not giving Payton a touchdown in the blowout Super Bowl win.
That was, Refrigerator Perry got one.
Yeah, everybody got one. Matt Sui got one, who was Peyton's really, really close friend. Who actually, when Peyton died, the executor of his estate was Matt Sui, according to this show, which was mind-blowing.
Those Football Lives are good. The 30 for 30s for a while were really good. I watched all of them, but
yeah.
I don't know if they've like changed producers or whatever. They're not nearly as compelling, but. The one about the 86 Bears is incredible. But here's the thing that's interesting about that.
Meaning the 86 Bears, the team that didn't win it
after
85?
The 85 Bears.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I thought they did a doc on the next year because they should have won more than one.
Right, the 85 Bears. But what they talk about is why they didn't win more, obviously. You know, they do talk about that. But there's at least two of Peyton's teammates. What was the white safety?
Fensick or Plank? Fensick?
I think it was Fensick, maybe. Yeah. Is he the one they interview a lot in that?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Him?
Yeah, it is. Fensick.
Him and one of the like defensive linemen type.
Hampton or McMichael?
One of those guys was like, two of them basically criticize Walter Payton for being upset about not getting a touchdown.
It was a huge part of this.
But that's the thing. It was like we just won the Super Bowl, man. We won a Super Bowl. Okay, you didn't get a touchdown, but you were a big part of the game. You know what I mean? It wasn't like you didn't play. Like, why are you upset about this? Like, this seems silly.
He was so injured by that, and you know, part of me understood why, that he was the Bears for so many years when they were horrible, but he got a bunch of carries and a bunch of carries in the red zone. But the compelling part was that after they gave the fridge a touchdown, and when the final gun sounded, Peyton was distraught, in tears.
Yes.
Goes to the back of the locker room, goes in like the medical room or whatever. His agent comes in and says, if you don't go out there and put on a good face when your team just won the Super Bowl, you will never live it down. You'll never live it down.
Right.
So he goes out there, and then they show the interview with Peyton, and you could tell, now that we know what we know, you couldn't tell then, I'm sure, that he was deeply injured by that.
Right. And that's amazing. And I mean, I get it to an extent. By the same token, I don't know.
I know. It's a tough one.
Here's my thing. You can't tell the story of the 85 Bears without Walter Payton. Like, he's probably, Singletary is a face of that team. McMahon is a face of that team. And Payton is a face of that team. Those are probably the three guys that are like the face.
Singletary, too.
That's what I said. Singletary.
McMahon and Payton, yeah.
McMahon and Payton. Those are the three faces of that team. So you can't tell that story without him. And here's the thing. It's similar. Were you in the locker room after the Seattle Super Bowl in Detroit?
Yeah.
Do you remember how one Ben Roethlisberger acted in the locker room?
I don't.
Huh?
I don't. Was he?
He didn't want to do any interviews. He was all angry. The teams are, having a good time all around him. He granted one 30-second interview with NFL Network.
I thought you were going to say with Ron Cook.
Well, probably that too. But my point is, he was not. Because he didn't play well. And not just that, I mean, they won. He was just sort of a sidecar there.
Yeah.
But I would say the same thing, two things. One, you just won the Super Bowl. You're the quarterback. You're going to get all the glory anyway. That's number one. And number two, your arm is a big reason why they got to that Super Bowl. Like,
yeah.
You can't tell the story of that season without him, the two touchdowns against the Colts, without him throwing a bunch against the Broncos, and you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, he had a great run to the Super Bowl.
You can't tell, you know what I mean? So you won the Super Bowl, and I just think I kind of side with, I think it's Fencik is the guy that they're interviewing, and he's kind of like, I don't understand what the big deal was. He didn't score a touchdown. We won the game. He's like, I didn't get an interception. I mean, it is what it is.
They went to Ditka, and you could tell that Ditka wanted to say that.
Yes.
And he sort of was talking around it, but then he gave the old, if I'd known what I know now, I would have given him the ball for a touchdown. He should have given Walter Payton a touchdown instead of Fridge, by the way. He should have.
All right.
They should have made sure that Payton scored. But I think both things can be true. Peyton needed to, and he did eventually put on a good face.
What was
in the
funny
locker
too was there was a lot of jealousy because the Fridge got so much.
Right.
But he was a larger than life.
Well, that story was great too. That the year before, when the Bears lost to the Niners in the championship game, Bill Walsh gave Guy McIntyre, remember the big guard?
Yeah.
He gave him a ball,
That's
gave
right.
him a touchdown, and Ditka said they embarrassed us by doing that.
Yeah.
And I will never forget it, to the point where it was either the season opener or early the next year. They went into San Francisco, into Candlestick, and kicked their asses.
Right.
And he made sure to give the Fridge a touchdown.
Right.
That's how the Fridge scoring was born.
Right.
Which is a great story.
I think one of the greatest upsets in the history of upsets, though, is that the Fridge is still alive. Given how heavy, how heavy he was,
yeah.
And how, a lot of those guys that are at that weight, that in the NFL, and a lot of them struggle. But he's still alive and healthy, apparently. And I forget what he does. I think he runs like a barbecue joint or something in South Carolina or something, doesn't he?
I don't know. I don't know whatever became of the Fridge.
I think that's what he does.
But he's a legend. Let's get back to the six-pack, shall we? Crack one. Paul, let's get through some things, as the six-pack was designed to do. The Falcons and Arthur Blank say that Matty Ice will be enshrined in their team's Ring of Honor this year already. He just retired 8 minutes ago, and he went to another team at the end of his career, but that's not my point. My point is, what springs to mind first for you when I say Matty Ice? What do you think of?
28-3. Unfortunately.
First thing I think of, too.
And he played well in that game.
He won an MVP, didn't he?
That year, I think he did, yes.
Yeah.
Me too.
I mean, I would say that, you know, is what it is.
That just hurts that he had a really good career. But when you lose in that spectacular of a fashion, it sort of colors everyone's career.
That's the thing about Matty Ice. I guarantee you that's going to keep him out of the Hall of Fame.
You don't think he'll get in?
I just think that's going to be one of those things. There's going to be too many voters who are just going to, you know?
Yeah. His numbers are good, but he certainly won't get in the first time.
No. And
he might never. You might be right.
He's seventh all-time in passing yards. But, I mean, of course, now what the game is all about, throwing the football. But he is up there in a lot of statistical categories.
Next, crack one for Paul. City Limits. All right. The Penguins and the Devils, same division, and Tommy Fitzgerald finally went out and got a goalie. I just don't know if this is the guy. Jacob Markstrom from the Flames, they give up a first-round pick to get him. The Flames are going to retain a really good portion of that deal, so they're only going to be paying $4 million a year for Markstrom. But, Paul, is this guy any good still? Let me read you his numbers here. I think he's 35 years old, and he's 34. He'll turn 35 next season. Calgary was a pretty good team, and he just had an even 500 record, and his save percentage the last 2 years is .905 and .892. Is this the answer for the Devils?
No.
What are we doing here?
No, I mean, I don't understand. Here's the thing about the Devils. You would think.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
They would do everything in their power to go get a legitimately really, really, really good time player. I mean, big time goalie. Because if they got a goalie that was pretty good, like that was really good,
yeah,
they would be a playoff team. I mean, that's, you know what I mean? And then from that point, then you just, you know, build around it. But I don't understand why you make this deal, to be honest.
Me neither. I don't know that this solves their problems at all. So, I mean, at least he's trying. I guess maybe the same with the Steelers quarterbacks. And I actually do like Russell Wilson, but at some point you have to at least try something different. And that's been a disaster for them. Next. Paul? Caitlin Clark is balling out right now. I mean, last night I think it was something like 23 points, 12 rebounds, a bunch of assists, a bunch of steals. That little break she had really helped her. And I don't know. You said you didn't like the WNBA that much. I'm completely compelled by all these teams. I didn't watch this league very much for its first, when did it start? Late 90s? Its first 20-some years of existence. Now I can't get enough of it. Will you guys tune into a WNBA game if it's on?
Yeah, I watch them. I mean, I'll watch them. I've watched it. I used to work in it. I was at the second ever WNBA Finals and the third ever WNBA Finals. I traveled with the Houston Comets. I traveled with the Phoenix.
Really?
Mercury.
Who were
Mercury.
On those teams back then? Who were some of the stars?
That was the Cheryl Swoops, Cynthia Cooper, Tina Thompson teams.
What was Cheryl Swoops like to interact with daily?
depending on what day it was.
Really?
Yeah, she was.
What was your job?
I wrote for all the NBA publications.
So you interacted with these people on a daily basis?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wrote for WNBA.com, for NBA.com. I wrote for Hoop Magazine. Do you remember Hoop Magazine?
Yes, of course.
I wrote for that. That was an NBA publication. I wrote for Inside Stuff. Remember that TV show, Inside Stuff?
Yeah, NBA TV. Shot? Yeah, with Willow Bay.
Really good. I wrote for Inside Stuff Magazine.
Was Willow Bay on that show?
Yes.
And
Ahmad Rashad. Yeah. So...
tell me more about Cheryl Swoops.
I did. You know, Swoops was, I mean, listen, she was, some days she was moody. Other days she was great. Cynthia Cooper was always fake. I mean, she just was, you know, but she was always really good to deal with, but she was fake. You know what I mean? It was always,
Would you guys just shoot the crap and have laughs together?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you who else was great. I mean, great. Probably my favorite. And maybe I was biased because I was working out in New York City, so I was at the Liberty games and practices all the time. But Teresa Weatherspoon was tremendous.
Really? You
know, she's the coach of the Sky now.
Yeah.
She was tremendous. Intense. I did a big story on her, and she was so much fun. I mean, she was great. So we, when they won the championship, I was at they had a party at Planet Hollywood in Houston. They had a party, like a private party for the Comets. And I was thinking to myself, this is pretty cool. Because back then I was, 25, 26 years old. I'm like, this is pretty cool. I'm sitting here at a bar, just at a table, three of us, four of us, four-seat little table, right? Sitting there with Gino Auriemma and Robin Roberts and someone else and me, you know.
What was Gino like?
Gino's the best.
Is he?
Oh, he's tremendous.
Down to earth?
Yeah, he's great. Yeah, he's down to earth. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago out at Spooky Nook, there's a hotel right there at Spooky Nook where these open period tournaments we have where all the Division I coaches are there to scout. They're allowed to come.
Yeah.
And they all stay in the hotel that's right there, and there's a bar. And a couple of my guys were in the bar. Gino came in, was buying drinks. They're laughing with everybody, having a good time, you know, just was cool. Like, really.
That's unbelievable that you were doing that.
He's a guy. So my point is that the WNBA, those teams with Tina Thompson, Cynthia Cooper and Cheryl Swoops.
Mm.
They won four in a row.
I bet.
The Liberty was good with Teresa Weatherspoon and Rebecca Lobo was on those teams. And then the Phoenix Mercury were pretty good. And of course, I did a couple of stories. I went out to Cleveland and did a couple stories on Susie, because if you remember, Susie went and played that year with the Rockers.
Susie McConnell.
Yeah, Susie McConnell. So I did a few stories, with them. So it was cool. I mean,
what a job, man! That's a great job.
And then I tell you, the coolest thing was, standing courtside for the NBA Finals. You know, Spurs, Knicks, Madison Square Garden. I'm on the baseline,
covering it for the NBA. So Spurs, Knicks with Latrell Sprewell and company.
Yeah, that Knicks team. I always tell the story that Knicks team had one of the toughest locker rooms to deal with ever.
Oh, man, I bet.
Just knuckleheads. I mean, it was like Ewing. Okay, let's start there. Who was the – was Herb Williams? Was that his name? What was there was a big center that was a numbskull, too. You had Latrell Sprewell. No, Starks. Starks
was gone. Yeah, Sprewell, Larry Johnson.
Larry Johnson. Who I've often said, if I had to rank, one being the biggest, and whatever number of athletes I've interacted with being the best guys, so say 10,000 being the best ever, and one being Larry Johnson's about two or three. I'll concede there might have been a couple of guys worse. So there was him.
Derek Harper, who was the point guard?
They had Chris Childs on that team. Mm. He wasn't very easy to deal with.
Who was the coach?
Van Gundy. And then
was he good to deal with?
Yeah, he was all right. I actually liked
funny
him. And he was actually good in the practice setting, where I'd go over there to do stuff at practices and whatever. He was actually pretty good. I'll tell you what's funny. I'll tell you this. This is really, really kind of funny. Speaking of Van Gundy, so do you remember Paul Silas, right?
Oh yeah.
So he had a charity event in like White Plains, you know, upstate there or whatever it is. He had a charity event for the Boys and Girls Club, where it was basically a basketball tournament. So corporations would, you know, so they're like a law firm in town, you know, they put their teams in. And he called it the Legends event. And I told you this. This is where I got to play with. The first year we played against Randy Smith. The second year I was like, okay, he's on our team. Not we had Rory Sparrow the first year. No, we don't want him. We want Randy Smith.
Yeah, I'll take him.
Yeah. So, but anyway, we played. So the NBA put a team in, and the Knicks put a team in. So we played against Van Gundy. Van Gundy was playing. What's the guy that's actually the coach now? I think Thibodeau. Where's he the coach?
Yeah, he's the coach of the Knicks.
Yeah, Thibodeau was on that team, and there was, you know, four or five their assistant coaches, scouts. They had a couple of guys that were, you know, former NBA players that were scouts for them, you know, and we beat the daylights out of them. We had the most loaded team ever.
With Randy Smith. What were you allowed, one, like, real player?
Everyone got an NBA legend. So, like, Melvin Daniels played, Rory Sparrow played, you know, all those. You know, every team got one of those. So, like, you know, you get these law firms. But what happened with us was Paul Silas was like, hey, listen, you know, because Paul Silas worked at the NBA. He was like, I forget what he, you know, he had some kind of consultant job or something. He said, hey, can my son and his two teammates play for your NBA team? So you remember Saul, what was the guy? He was the coach of the Rockets for a couple of years. Saul Silas or whatever his name.
Oh, that guy, yeah.
Yes. So he played. Well, him and his two teammates, I want to say they played at Dartmouth or Brown or one of the Ivy Leagues, and they were all three starters. And they were all in their, you know, early 20s. So we had those three. We had this kid who was in, who was doing an internship, who was from like Africa, and he was playing at like name one of those Division II schools right around New York City. There, he was playing. He was like 6'7", 6'8". We had Randy Smith. I mean, I was still in really good shape. You know what I mean? We blew the doors off of everybody. It was one of the most fun tournaments I've ever. I actually have a picture of it somewhere. I'd like to be able to find it. I can't
find that.
I've moved so many times since then, but it's a picture with us holding the trophy.
I want to see that.
But those were the days, and I'm going to tell you, that year, the one year, I actually, between the Nets, the Knicks, and the Sixers, I probably got to like 70 NBA games.
Did you see Michael Ray Richardson play at that time? Or was that later? No, that was later.
Yeah, that was later.
I mean, love that guy.
The bottom line is I got a chance, and one of the things I realized back then is that people that say they hate the NBA have probably never seen it live.
Yeah, it's the same for hockey as me.
Yeah.
It's just different live than on television.
So yeah. Oh, Chris Childs. They had Marcus Camby, Chris Childs.
Marcus Camby.
Yes. And I'll tell you, Sprewell. Oh, Kurt Thomas. That was the other guy. And Herb Williams. Those two guys. But, you know, Allen Houston was okay. And, of course, Charlie Ward was okay. The thing about Charlie Ward was people in New York, they were triggered by his religious stuff. You know what I mean? So he had, like, a real guarded relationship with the media because he was never sure what their angle was going to be. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
But if you got him in a practice setting where you just kind of talked to him, like the one day I went up to him and talked to him about, hey, listen, I'm a Florida State guy. You know, we talked about his career at Florida State and how he came about it and everything. And I wrote like a, you know, article about him changing uniforms from football to basketball, and you know, so, and he was cool about it, you know.
Man, he's an all-time athlete that we don't talk enough about. We got to run. Call now to win two tickets for the Pirates game July 5th at PNC Park. Join us for Bucko Luau weekend at the stadium and enjoy some fun in the sun all weekend long. Caller number 4 to our dear friend City Limits, 412-928-9370.